So can astrology tell you what you like to eat, what you like to wear, what you like to do? Up next, Stephen Weiss on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, tell me about signs of taste and how that tied into astrology.
Most of my career has been spent as a journalist and consultant in the restaurant industry. I took a degree from the Culinary Institute of America in New York after I got my master's degree in English. So I spent a lot of time writing and thinking about food, and that morphed into trends work because I got to be interested in why was quiche popular one year and not popular another year. In any event,
and you do know real men don't eat quiche.
No. I regret having said the word quiche. I won't live it down. But I was invited to speak at the annual convention of the National Restaurant Association in Chicago on food trends. And the year that I was invited to speak, this was sort of the beginning of Nouvelle Cuisine, and we were being told by all of the knowledgeable food sources that what we really liked was goat cheese and you know, bitter lettuce and handmade truffles. And I had a moment where I couldn't imagine getting up in front of 100,000 restaurateurs or, you know, speaking at a conference of 100,000 restaurateurs and telling them to throw away their fryers, that French fries were no longer popular. So I wanted to find a way to be common, to approach the subject of food trends with common sense, strangely enough. And what I did was I mailed out a survey to 100 foodies, most of them professional, a lot of newspaper food editors, a lot of restaurant owners, a lot of hotel food and beverage, you know, vice presidents. And I asked them, among other questions, if you had to survive on a desert island for the rest of your life with only 10 foods, what 10 foods would they be? And you know, needless to say, not one of them told me goat cheese.
Yeah.
You know, there were a lot more important things if I was limiting them to 10. But on that survey, I asked them at the very end of the survey, as kind of a throwaway, what's your birthday? And so because I already had this interest in astrology, after I did all my other work, I broke this out in terms of astrological science, and I had one of those ahas, you know, there was some correspondences. And so what I did over the next couple of years, I interviewed 300 more people about their food preferences and found, Today, market research is a lot more sophisticated. They do it a lot better than I did. But this was in an age where this was kind of breakthrough. And I did 400 people, and I broke them out, categorized them on the basis of their astrological sign. And they were wonderful correspondences. So I wrote a book about that called Signs of Taste.
Is it true restaurants will have like red around because it'll make you hungry?
Over the years, and I did this for a long time. I have done this for a long time. Yeah, you hear everything. And yes, color selection, the menu writing is far more of a discipline than you would have ever imagined. That people tend to order the first and last items on a menu, and if you draw a box around something, people are far more inclined to order it. And yes, the color coordination, absolutely. I was told for years that blue is an appetite depressant, and you know, you just bought it. It was part of the rules.
And you know, with menus, if it's too big, you know, there's just so many things on it, doesn't that hurt selection?
Menu writing changed, though, because you know we grew up in an era where they were printed, and quite often an investment was made in menus. Now with computers, there's hardly a restaurant that doesn't change its menu every day, because one of the trends right now, obviously, is local produce and fresh produce and buying foods of the season. So computers now rule the menu writing process, and if you don't like your menu today, you have a new one tomorrow.
What about music at a restaurant to make you eat?
You know, that's another area where you'll find experts with all sorts of theories about it. One of the things that's absolutely true that I learned early about restaurants is that owners tend to like a real noisy restaurant because, frankly, that's money to their ears. So I've had this discussion with restaurateurs over the years because they like a little commotion. It means there's action in their place and they're making money. But frequently, guests aren't that partial to noise and like a somewhat quieter ambiance. This isn't true of the younger generations, by the way, who have nothing to say to each other, so the noise is just fine with them. I apologize for saying that, but a little.
Do you want to use me as a test with regards to food, and I'll tell you what I like and what I eat. By the way, Stephen, are two different things. Because I try to watch what I eat. Once you get to be our age, right, you have to be really careful.
Yeah.
So I do that, and you know, I'm afraid sometimes of binging on things I like. So I am constantly eating as healthy as I can and fighting back.
Well, you know, I'll talk about Gemini a little bit, and you can tell me if it sounds right to you or not. But
okay.
But we're also intersecting. In other words, your personal taste as a Gemini, at least as far as the book establish them, they're intersecting with this cultural moment we're living through right now, which happens to be a very Capricorn moment. And Gemini and Capricorn aren't necessarily the best mix. Capricorn is very serious and conservative, and Capricorn right now, they want to know what the use of food is. You know, what's it going to do for me? And all of the things that we're going through right now in terms of personal image and health. And the structure of the food delivery system and keeping it safe, you know, and healthy. These are all Capricorn things. Gemini, however, what I learned about Gemini from interviewing, you know, 20 or 30 Geminis was that food wasn't really. Now, you have planets in Taurus, and Taurus is a very big food sign. But most Geminis, conversation was far more important than the food they were eating. That they tend to like events where there were savories and appetizers and hors d'oeuvres, but that there was a lot of conversation going on. I also came to find out that drive-through restaurants were probably invented for Geminis, who tend to love to drive and tend to eat in their car. It's not they like to read books about food, I found out, but that food itself was a necessity more than it was an indulgence, and that talking. And in fact, back then when I wrote the book, smoking, I mean, doing things, you know, with one's hands and one's mouth were far more essential than a learned appreciation of gastronomy.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
Anything? Does that ring a bell with you at all?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Tell me more.
Well, Geminis are the fast foodies. I do some presentations on this. I've done a lot of presentations in the food world on this topic, which is greeted with some humor and some aha. But I in every one of the food signs, I put up a food icon for that sign. And the Gemini icon that I tend to use is Ronald McDonald. That quickness, that the part of our society that is devoted to doing things, you know, without too much effort, to doing it casually, to doing it fast. Those are very Gemini attributes.
Yes, absolutely. Almost type A. As you, you know, we keep going and going and going. What about the two personalities involved?
I'm sorry, the what?
The two personalities within a Gemini.
Oh, yeah, twins, no. Right? It manifests. It's funny. It manifested more in my study of leadership. The two parts. Gemini and you're in the perfect, you know, needless to say, you're in the perfect occupation for what you do. Geminis need stimulation. They need mental stimulation. So it's not just that, you know, that sense of that, you know, everyone talks about Gemini, the twins, and you know, you're good and you're bad, and there's the angel and the devil, and there's that's all good. I mean, that all makes sense. But really, it's a matter of mental stimulation. And how fortunate you are as a Gemini to be in a occupation where you get this mental stimulation on a level that most of us could barely dream about. I mean, what your life is like from night to night, not everyone could tolerate.
Well, that is true. Let's run down the astrological chart real quickly, and then tell me just quickly what you think people like to eat.
Just very, very basically, because people like to hear this about themselves, so I appreciate your asking that. Aries is a sign of energy, and they like the temperature extremes. I found that Aries liked grilled meats, and they liked ice-cold drinks, anything that had a temperature extreme. And I think I mentioned in the book that to them, a baked Alaska, ice cream cooked in the oven, was like a holy thing. that if you could have both extremes in the same dish, you were really pleasing an Aries. Aries also liked to be the first people to try out a new restaurant. They won't necessarily still be there when the restaurant becomes popular, but Aries love to be the first to do something. So they're frequently the people most disposed towards trying out the new place.
Very trendy people, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't want anyone to misconstrue that word as a bad thing. And in my line of work, that's a very good thing. We need the people who are willing to experiment, and that's Aries. Taurus, the bull. What's funny about them is that they tend to like things that have to do with cows. I mean, needless to say, all of our diets are changing, but these were the real beef eaters of the zodiac. They liked anything that was made from dairy. They liked the things that cows might like to eat, such as salt and mineral content. Taurus essentialists. Taurus is the sign, God bless them, that appreciates taking one's time to savor something. And a great story that I tell in the book, Beard, the great food guru, James Beard, who was a Taurus, was told towards the end of his life that he could no longer use as much salt in his recipes for health reasons. He had to take salt out of recipes. And so you read some of his later recipes, and they're loaded with caviar. That's a Taurus substitution. Taurus really likes very fine things. And once again, you know, anything fine that can be savored, high quality. These are the people who support high quality endeavors. We've talked a little bit about Gemini. Cancer is the king and queen of the comfort food. Cancer is maybe one of the greatest food signs, because in medical astrology, Cancer rules the stomach. And Cancer is the person who believes that the center of consciousness is your stomach. You know, we've all had mothers, you know, who have proclaimed the gospel of, eating at home and eating mom's food. Cancers have no guile when it comes to food. Either food is good or it's not good.
Yeah.
And they're not so interested in the scenery or the colors on the wall or the way the menu is pointed out. They know a good place, and they will patronize a good place. They're totally into does it taste good? Do I like it? You know, is it fun? If a Cancer recommends a restaurant, go there. That's what I say about Cancer.
Next up, Leos.
Leos love to celebrate. They love any food that's related to celebrations or parties or big gatherings. Leos are very, very dramatic and theatrical sign. In fact, everybody in our generation, yours and mine, George, we all have a little Leo on us, because Pluto, the generational marker planet, was in Leo when we were all born. And so we like festive gatherings where people are going to share stories and tell tales about their lives. And so we like any food that enhances that. And this could be a pizza, it could be champagne, it can be just about anything.
As long as it's a celebration.
Birthday cake and champagne is a very, very Leo kind of experience. it's the top of the chart for them.
How about holidays for Leos or people in general?
Holidays help me a little bit.
Like Christmas, Thanksgiving. I mean,
needless to say, there are certain signs. For example, Capricorn, Cancer, and Scorpio are very, for different reasons, but for very powerful reasons, are very, very keen usually on celebrations of family history, of personal history, and it's not that the other signs aren't, but there's a quality to Capricorn, Scorpio, and Cancer that. You know, there's something very sacred about the gathering of the tribe, and frequently these are signs that don't want to try anything new on the holidays. They want the same meal that they've had for years.
How about Virgos?
Virgo is the sign of the healthy eater. Virgo, everything that comes to mind when we think about the nutritional interest in this country right now is very typical of Virgo, because the generation after us, Pluto and Leos, was Pluto and Virgo, and that generation is totally dedicated to, how shall I say it, the consideration of the effect of everything they put in their body on their health and well-being. It was amazing as I did this study and I got into signs of taste. I found out that an inordinate amount of newspaper food editors around the country were Virgos. They love tabulating recipes. They love half teaspoons of things. I came across one Virgo who owned a catalog that of food products, and he sold brushes for every vegetable. I didn't know that celery should have its own brush and carrots should have its own. I mean, that's very Virgo.
How about the Libras?
I said about the Libras that they tend to like the ampersand foods. They're the balance. So they like soup and sandwich, burgers and fries. Libras are almost invariably artists who are balancing things. I mean, that's their function in life, is to bring things to a peaceful stasis. And in food, they love contrasts that work together. And you know, I could give you more exotic examples, but the idea of a grilled cheese and a tomato soup is just perfect for Libra. Now, Libra also, you know, as artists, they were the first people who liked to see on the menu that you know, please be patient, we're preparing your food fresh. You know, they don't like, they're not necessarily partial to microwaves and doing things very quickly. They like when you take time to do something really well and balanced.
And they don't like conflict, do they?
Well, it's not their deal. Now, yeah, Libras are funny people because they can be the biggest bosses in the zodiac, but they do it with charm rather than with aggression. You got to be careful with Libras.
Scorpios.
Scorpio was funny because I found two things about them. They you know, Scorpio's color is said to be red, and I found out that they liked red foods, whatever they were. It was pretty funny. I hate to make that generalization, but if it was a chili pepper or a strawberry or whatever, they tend to like red foods. Actually, Scorpio wants to make sure that the money they spend on an experience is well spent. The biggest sin you can create with dining with a Scorpio is not give them their money's worth. And that means the taste experience they have, the amount of food they have, the kind, they're very, very, you know, keyed into whether they're getting what it is they've been promised. And I found that there was a real propensity to like foods that were highly flavored rather than less flavored, because they couldn't understand, you know, why would you want a subtle food?
We'll get into the other astrological signs in a moment, but it would be funny to see a menu based on your astrological sign. So the food would say, you know, this recommended for you Geminis.
Yeah,
or
no,
you Aries.
I tell you that's not such a hypothetical, because
is that a cat in the background?
Yeah, damn, I have to remove my Siamese.
No, that's okay. No, keep the cat there. I just wanted to make sure it was a cat. You didn't have somebody tied up in the room or anything.
It's nothing. It's nothing more profound than that. But in the sense of it not being a hypothetical, Domino's Pizza hired me just last month. You see their they have these new oven baked sandwiches. And they thought it would be fun, and they did. They hired me to do a release on what kind of sandwiches people like. And excuse me for just on the next break, I'll take care of the cat issue.
Yeah, you got a couple minutes. Don't worry.
Yeah, but it was they thought it was fun. I mean, and that's all they were trying after. They thought just like hopefully your audience is finding this engaging. It's not the gospel, but they thought it was cool. And as part of their promotion, they put out a release that got picked up by a lot of news organizations about. Well, if you're an Aries or you're a Sagittarius, you might like to try the chicken habanero sandwich.
Tom Monahan's done a great job with Domino's, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. You know, he's not actively involved any longer.
No, he's kind of pushed his way out. He may have even sold out, but, man, what a wonderful guy. Donated a lot to the Catholic Church as well. Stephen, when we come back, let's quickly go through Sagittarius, Capricorns, Aquarius, Pisces, and also get your take, because you are an astrologer, on just what's going on today and what's going on tomorrow. Some predictions from you next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with astrologer Stephen Weiss. Much more to talk with him about, though, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, we left off with Sagittarius. What are they like?
Sagittarians rarely run into something that they won't try in a lifetime. They're they're the omnivores of the of the zodiac. They are the globalists, and they like to try foods more than any other sign of different cultures. They're also partial to starches. Their ruling planet is Jupiter, which is the big inflated planet in our solar system, and they're fascinated by the fact that starch, whether it's bread or pasta or rice, expands as it cooks, and they like any kind of exotic sauce or topping on a starch.
All right, let's go to Capricorn. You touched on them briefly.
Yeah, Capricorns are interesting because they're the sign. It's funny, food is such an enormous part of our culture and our interests. But it's interesting to me that we're now in a fairly Capricorn moment in our civilization, and Capricorns are the sign that asks what use is something. They're motivated by the utility of things, and the taste of food is not something that is immediately apparent to them as something as useful. Now they appreciate dining as a venue for accomplishing business or romance or any number of things. It's not that they're anti-dining, but the hullabaloo about food isn't necessarily something germane to their existence. Now, one caveat: Capricorns love history, and they read history and biography like how-to books. It's exceedingly useful advice on how to live your life. And as a result, the ultimate authority for most Capricorns regarding food is their mother, and especially with Capricorn men, I pity the women who have to cook for Capricorn men, because Capricorn man is the one who wants it made just like mom used to make it, because she was the ultimate authority. I have one friend who owns a chain of restaurants, and he used to have his mother's phone number on the wall. And if the tomato sauce wasn't exactly right, you had to call his mother. And that's pretty typical of a Capricorn.
Okay. Aquarians.
I'm an Aquarius. Since in full disclosure, since you disclosed you were a Gemini, I'll disclose I'm an Aquarius. And Aquarius, two things. I call them crazers. An Aquarius gets almost scientifically wrapped up in food. So if they're interested in peanut butter this week, you go to their house and they'll have every variety of peanut butter that's carried in the store, and they're testing them against each other. And they can craze about any food out there. So they'll treat it as a science project. They also like foods that are surprising, and by this I mean they like anything that has a filling. In other words, ravioli is a perfect food for an Aquarian. And they also like big public. They like the food of public events, like ballpark food. They're big on hot dogs and popcorns and things that you eat at a ballpark, because they like being out with the crowd.
And lastly, Pisces.
A Pisces, if you ask them what they like to eat, will tell you a story about their grandmother. Of all of the signs, of all the research that I did for the book, Pisces never had any consistency. And I just came to accept that Pisces associations with anything in this universe were very personal, very deep, very private, very imaginative. But if their grandmother burned the toast, then they like burned toast to this day. And I guess that's the best I can do with Pisces.
Now, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk to you about what's going on now, astrologically speaking, and what the future holds for us as well.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because there seems to be in the course of history almost an emotional bias in astrologers to tell you how bad things are going to get. I don't know if when you get your union card punched as an astrologer, you make some sort of pledge to just do fire and brimstone stuff, and talk about the impending collapse of civilization. I don't go for that sort of thing. And yet, these are pretty harsh times. I mean, if one just looks at the astrological iconology, the way it is, we're coming into some very testing times. And all I'm saying, I mean, my ability with astrology is to look at previous historical periods where we're going through similar patterns or the same patterns, and we're just invoking an awful lot of the Great Depression and an awful lot of the American Revolution of all things right now, and the astrological patterns that are big right now, so we're dealing with some pretty harsh energy flows. We'll be fine. I honestly do believe this. I heard a very excellent astrologer by the name of Ken Johnson gave a talk recently to a group that I'm a member of, mm-hmm. about the Mayan calendar, about 2012, which is on everyone's mind. And of course, Hollywood now has decided that they're going to scare the bejesus out of us with this movie that's coming out. But Ken made a great thing that made my heart happy, and I want to share it with you and your listeners. He said, yes, the Mayan calendar is ending in 2012, but it's ending in the same way that the odometer on your car eventually hits all nines, and then it turns over to all zeros. He said, when that happens, your car doesn't stop.
I hope he's right.
And yes, his point is, yeah, we're going into a different age by Mayan reckoning, but that doesn't, but this is a, as he explained it very brilliantly, this is a very numerologically oriented society. There are amazing 5,000 year periods that are parceled into very, very interesting numerical relationships, and we're just starting that cycle over again. So I want to share that because it let me sleep a little easier that night when he said that.
What do you see out there, Stephen, in terms of future events that we need to be careful about? Do you see anything like that? Do you go that way?
Yeah, well, you know, these are the stories that I see in astrology right now. I want to be very, I need to be true to my own self and honest about the way I feel about this. I do feel that these are associative, iconic stories. Astrology tells you, astrology is like playing music. You know, one of the things you've been gracious not to ask me is if I believe in astrology. And the truth is, people ask the question all the time, and they expect you to say something stupid afterwards. You know, if you believe in it, then you're not scientific. You deny free will. You're fundamentally, you know, putting down religion. The question, do you believe in astrology, to me is the same kind of question as, do you believe in music? Do you believe in art? Do you believe in poetry? That, to me, is what astrology is. It's a craft and an art. It's wrapped in science and mathematics, so it seems scientific, but I don't think it's scientific. And I'm sorry for that long preamble to your question, but I want to be careful when I say these sort of things. We are in a moment where the planet Pluto, which is the slowest moving of the planets, and by the way, the astronomers downgraded it for a good reason. I have no argument with the reasons they advanced for saying Pluto didn't deserve to be a real planet anymore, because mm-hmm. we're discovering a lot more objects in our solar system that are similar to Pluto in size and periodicity and having satellites or not having satellites and so forth. But Pluto, telling astrologers not to use Pluto is like telling them that he can't use the color red when he paints anymore. So Pluto as an icon will always exist. As the slowest moving of the planets, of the outer planets, it represents generational transformations. It takes anywhere from about 16, well, actually it can be as few as 11 to as many as 30 years going through a sign. I have found that these are excellent generational markers. And when Pluto goes into a sign, it tells you about the values of the group that is born during that transit of Pluto through the sign. And it also tells you, when Pluto moves into a sign, it tells you the values that are going to be important in surviving the historical period. Now, if I'm not rambling on too much, values I've come to understand are not aspirational. We use the word values a lot in our conversation, but values aren't things that we aspire to be or think we should be. Values are the things we have to be in order to survive. And so Pluto last year in 2008 moved into the sign of Capricorn. Now Capricorn's a bit of a hard case as a sign. Capricorn is the opposite of immediate gratification. It tells you that we have to be conservative and patient and do hard work and pay dues, and that there's going to be failure and frustration along the way. It's a difficult, autocratic, hard, dues-paying sign, and we just moved into it for the next 14 years until 2024. About 15 years.
That's a long poke.
Yes, and now not only did that start last year, Pluto is making very heavy aspects to some of the other outer planets. By heavy aspects, I mean aspects that astrologers consider difficult rather than helpful. And so right now, Pluto is moving, is about to square Saturn this week. You know, Pluto's in Capricorn, squaring the ruling planet of Saturn. And I don't want to get too deep in the iconology. It's not helpful. In fact, I tell astrologers all the time, speak English. No one understands what you're talking about. Yeah. But basically, we're finding our valium systems challenged by situations that are not tenable or pleasant. And Pluto is about to square Uranus, which is going to bring change. There's an enormous amount of pressure on us to find ways to be patient and smart and do the hard work that's required. And I know how strongly you feel about all of this. Sure. We're not necessarily geared to do this easily, so it's going to be done the hard way. And I don't know what the hard way means exactly, because but any astrologer would tell you, and as I say, I hate the doom and end of civilization stuff, but it's difficult aspects, and any astrologer who didn't tell you that would be you know fudging the events. So yes, it's a challenging period. I would, if I haven't rambled on too long here, like to add one more thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, in 2012, the planet Neptune, okay, forgive me, these are the only icons I know, and I'll do my best to try to explain it. The planet Neptune moves into the sign of Pisces, which is the sign that Neptune rules. And it takes Neptune, interestingly enough, Neptune takes about 100, and I think it's 100, 147, no, it's 164 years Neptune takes to go around the sun. Well, if you do the quick math, you'll count back 164 years. We are living at the moment where in our consciousness as human beings, Neptune was discovered by astronomers in Europe in the year 1846. We are living at the first Neptune cycle. Neptune is coming back to the place where we first discovered it in the sky 164 years ago, and it's coming into the sign of Pisces, which it rules. Neptune is becoming the preeminent planet in astrological calculation right now. And it's interesting to me that Pluto was downgraded, because that makes Neptune now the big outside planet, you know, the one that circles all the other planets.
Right.
It gives the kind of primacy to Neptune. Neptune, okay, so the issue is Neptune moving into its most powerful place for 14 years, starting in 2012. Neptune is the opposite of reason. Neptune is all about the imagination and creativity and things that you're not expecting, and almost, you can almost say that it represents the impossible. I've said at times that it represents where change occurs on a providential level. I mean, you know, it invokes the power of the universe to create things that are unknowable until they happen. It's mysterious. It's so ephemeral. It's so the opposite of everything that our society seems to value at this moment. Earlier we talked about data collection and metrics and quantification and all of these things that are dominating our culture right now. Neptune is the exact opposite of all those things, and it's becoming stronger and stronger right now and very dominant in 2012. Because of Neptune's nature as a mysterious planet, as one where, as I say, change occurs on a providential level, a level that you and I as human beings can't possibly anticipate, I don't think we're supposed to know what's going to happen in 2012. I mean, that's my bottom line on this.
Yeah.
I think we're being told specifically, you're not supposed to know.
Are these trends, Stephen, do they affect the masses in a point where 80% of them, it affects them the same way, and 20% it doesn't? Is there a breakdown that way?
I appreciate the question. What's fascinating to me as someone who, I can honestly say that I've resisted, you know, falling deeply into the credulity of all of this. As someone who's observed it for as long as I have, I'm amazed at how often it does embrace a large part of the population, and it does seem to be an accurate predictor. Thank goodness, not always. I think, you know, being humble is a very good way to go into astrology or any metaphysical pursuit.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, astrologers aren't, let's put it this way, in specific answer to your question, astrologers aren't the kind of people to do 80-20 breakdowns.
But you do see it happening with trends, don't you?
I see it. A couple of years ago, I wrote I co-authored a book, and I want to mention my co-authors, Ken Beller and Lewis Patler. We wrote a book called The Consistent Consumer, and this was not an astrological effort. This was, we were interested in consumer values. In other words, as I told you, we came to understand that they were survival mechanisms, not aspirational behaviors. And we came to believe by studying various generations that they kept their values through their entire lives. And values could manifest in all sorts of behaviors. But basically, I'll give you an example. Our generation, the Pluto and Leo generation, in the 1960s, many of us were countercultural people. We were hippies. We were against the war. We were against the establishment. And then 10 years later, in the 70s, we were the most materialistic, capitalistic people you ever met in your life. Same people, and we came to understand that the value that was behind this was a desire to be theatrical, a desire to have a life experience, the desire to burn bright, the desire to go out there and make something of ourselves as individuals. And that was the value. Well, these values seem to last with generations, you know, all the way through their lifetimes. I guess I've gone a little, you know, I got excited and I kind of lost sight of the question, if you want to just hear me back here.
Well, no, but we were talking about how these astrological trends tend to go with the masses, and you know, not everyone's affected.
Well, I would say that in some of the cases of some of the heavier outlying planets, very much so, and that's why right now earlier we spoke about this generational matter of technology. Every generation seems to adopt the behaviors of the generations before it, and then add something to it. And right now we're dealing with generations that are being formed that this computerized, you know, data stream world, it's first nature to them, not second nature, and so there's no questioning in them to the sense that they need this data stream, they need constant quantification, they need constant categorization, because they find our generation, yours and mine, George, they find us a little bit spacey. You know, we're interesting, but we're not getting accomplished what needs to be done, you know, and that's a matter for engineers.
Now, these generational trends that you were talking about earlier, do they generally go in patterns? You were talking, you know, these cycles, but what's the hot thing right now, for example, and what generation is it hot for?
Well. The generation that was born from I'm very interested in the generation that was born from about 1984, and you know, it's funny, I'm a big admirer of Strauss and Howe, who've been guests on your show, and who've blazed the demographic field, but I think they went awry a little bit when they just kept the 20-year generational increments. The truth of the matter is that 20-year generation seemed to be pretty good in an agricultural world where generations were pretty much the same generation to generation. Once we hit modern times, you know, around World War I, things started to speed up quite a bit. And I think generational formations have a lot more to do with the zeitgeist and cultural developments than they do with biological developments of 20-year maturation cycles. But having said that, we think there's a generation that started about 1984 and went through 1995, a very short 11-year generation that my co-authors and I call the Transformers. And that group right now is very interesting because of their age. They're the group that's in college right now. They're the group that's going into the workforce. I guess the youngest of them would be about 15 right now, and the oldest would be about 25. And that's the generation that creates trends. That's the right age, and that generation is a very, very forceful Scorpio generation that's gonna knock the stuffing out of everything. And we could talk a little bit more about this if you'd like.
Sure thing. And we'll take phone calls. It'll be Stephen Weiss's final hour, so get ready next.